time for the Jason Aaron Manifest. Sit down, grab a drink.
We go in 3, 2.
This episode was super cool for me. It is episode number 6 with the famed actor Don Full of Love, who you might know better as Mayor Goldie Wilson. So we got to talk back when I did Back in Time. He, of course, appeared in the documentary. But this time was a little bit different. I went out to California. Don and I hung out a little bit, just talked about life and the industry and work and all the things that we do here on The Manifest. Before we get started, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Google Play or wherever it is that you consume your podcast media. Without any further ado, episode number 6, Don Full of Love, here we go. This is episode 6 of the Jason Aaron Manifest, and this is a very special episode.
The Jason Aaron Manifest.
You like that, right?
Yeah.
Because the acronym is JAM, so I have like a nice jelly bottle going. I'll send you the logo, it's nice. So the guy you hear talking is Don Full of Love.
That's
who,
me.
Some people might know better as Mayor Goldie Wilson from the Back to the Future trilogy. Appeared in 2 out of 3, because they didn't have a...
We'll just call it the Wild Wild West.
Yeah, there was no mayor back then.
Because there were no cowboys back then.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't any black people in the Wild West.
Do you know the funny thing is the term cowboy? You know where it came from.
I did until you just said that.
Look it up. I'll just tell you to look it up. The original term cowboy.
Yeah, well, you're on a podcast that listeners might want to know.
Mm-hmm. I can't do everything for you, but it had nothing to do with John Wayne.
Well, I'm sure anybody listening to this has Google. So, this is a very special episode because A, we're recording it on location in California, and B, that sound that you hear in the background, Don and I are playing mini golf while we're recording this in Adam Contreras' backyard.
Golf Con.
Better known as Golf Con.
Golf Con 9.
And this will certainly be in Adam's February highlights, even though it's not really February yet, right. But it's close enough. It's tomorrow. So, he'll edit that part out.
This has Back to the Future lore in it. It's got the screen used DeLorean from fastest DeLorean in the world.
It does. I mean, we ended up here because of Adam. Because this crazy guy, Adam Contreras, sent me a Facebook message one day and said, check out this CBS News story on my backyard. And then I ended up here, and you ended up here, and we all ended up here.
That was my first time ever here.
Really?
Yeah.
4 years ago.
That was my first time.
So, Don, first of all, a lot of people probably think you just did one movie and then fell off the face of the planet. That is not accurate.
No, not at all. Google it.
That's gonna be. He's like
Don Flynn, worst radio guest of all time.
Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl 3 years ago? I am only here so I do not get fined. That was the answer to every question. But so Back to the Future wasn't even your first. You acted since you were a kid.
Yes,
you were Michael Jackson.
I was Michael Jackson's voice on the Jackson 5 cartoon show that most Gen Xers and no millennials know about.
But, I mean, what's that like to play Michael Jackson? How old were you?
I was 11 and 12.
So, I mean, you were the most popular kid in school, hands down.
I had a little reputation.
I mean, short of Michael Jackson actually coming to be a student at your school, I mean, you were it. You're the bee's knees.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then what? Then what do you do after that?
Well, I did a bunch of TV, a bunch of cartoon series for the company that did the Jackson 5 cartoon shows, a company called Rankin Bass Production. And they had a few, you know, Saturday morning shows. So I worked a lot on shows, a show called Kid Power. I worked on a show called Emergency Plus 4, which was an animated version of the old TV show Emergency. And then just started doing various stuff on camera. Wound up doing voiceover again in the second part of my career, or the third part, I should say.
So voiceover's kind of always been your thing.
Seems to be where my forte is.
But the thing you're most known for?
Mayor!
Unbelievable.
Yeah, man, that's
one
funny.
One word, and then another 5 words after.
Dude, it's like I've become famous over roughly a minute and 12 seconds.
So you do this one scene in this movie, and, you know, listen, I'll tell people, your Google it line, if you haven't seen Back in Time and you're listening to this podcast, I'm confused, so go watch it. But you explain there, I mean, you never think that this thing's going to be anything. And now, how much of your life do you devote to still being Mayor Goldie Wilson?
Wow, man, that's a good question. I haven't really gauged it as far as time, but it's quite a bit of time, you know, maintaining social media status and dealing with people around the world and going to various conventions and stuff like that. Craziest thing in the world, man. It took, 32 years now? So we were at about the 25th anniversary is when I got on board. So here we are all these years later, and it seems like it's bigger than it was then. So it's a trip.
How many cons do you do a year?
It varies. You know, some of the bigger ones I don't do. I tend to do a lot of the smaller ones because what happens is Michael J. Fox or Chris Lloyd will go to, you know, the big ones, and, you know, I'll get marketed out.
I mean, how many weekends do you devote to cons?
It depends. I mean, well, it's not a matter of time and devoting. As it stands, this year I'm only scheduled for 3.
That's it?
Yeah. So I don't flood myself. I mean, the majority of my fan base deals with me, like, through social media and marketing things on the websites, and that's how I, you know, interface.
So, hey, let me get a picture, autograph.
Yeah, or you can come, you know, on my website, www.mayorgoldiebttf.com. You can actually see me on a podcast called Flash and the Fundamentals.
Wow.
My dear friend Adam Contras. And now I am on The Jam Show.
I love that. I might have to use that as just a voice drop.
You realize that costs $5,000.
Can we get that again slowly? So that's an interesting thing. How much has it slowed down since 2015? You know, the 30th anniversary, the banner year. Is it slowing down? Is it
not
ever,
really?
Is it going away?
No, I mean the 30th anniversary was like the 2015 thing was like, you know, the penultimate. I doubt that it'll ever be like that again. But the fan base didn't just fall away because 30 years, you know, 2015 came. You know,
I think what happened was the non-fans were interested in 2015
a lot because it was a marketing little hype thing.
Yeah, you know? There was so much news coverage around it, but those aren't the people that were really interested in you anyway. Per se, you as Mayor Goldie Wilson.
Well, I don't know. There was a fair percentage that were. You think it surprises me.
You think those are the people going to the show? Like, here's the thing. I never went when we did Back in Time. I went to more Comic Cons than I can count.
Mm-hmm.
And we had panels, and then you know, we went to London with you guys right. Or whatever. I had never been to a Comic Con in my life before that.
Me neither.
So I don't know. I don't know that it would have, that anything would have compelled me if I wasn't doing that movie to go to a Comic-Con and meet.
You'd have to be a fan of either that film or the genre of science fiction, science fantasy. And there's so many people that are.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm as big a Back to the Future fan, you know, as the next guy. I'm not obsessed. I mean, I always have to tell people, I am not obsessed. I have more Back to the Future toys now.
I tend not to use the word obsession. People have a love for this trilogy, and their love is lovely.
Okay. I would have never bought a toy DeLorean. It's just not something, I don't collect stuff. I don't spend my money on it, but
right.
I got lots of free ones, and I have them proudly displayed in my flux capacitor, my Mr. Fusion.
I don't even have a flux capacitor.
Oh, so you don't know the right people.
Apparently.
I got two of each.
Wow.
Second one's already gone, though. Gave it to my producer, but... But yeah, I mean, I have that stuff. I love having that stuff out. It's just like, I would never spend my money on that. I would never have, I'm a sports guy. I love playing sports. Like, that's what I do in my free time. So I just would never really go to a Comic-Con. And then after going to every Comic-Con under the sun in like a 15-month period, I said, I'm never going again. And I did. I went
yeah,
a few weeks
yeah,
ago.
You
I took my kid, though. It wasn't me.
Some of them are really, really good. And some of them are not.
I love the culture. Like, so I went to one in the Nassau Coliseum in Long Island. All right, this was they happened to have had all of the DC people from the newest film. So they had Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman, and they, you know, Henry Cavill was there, Superman, Jason, whatever his last name is, the guy who plays Aquaman, the one who's married to
Lisa Bonet.
Yeah,
Jason Momoa.
Yeah, that guy. So he was there, but I think they were all there briefly. You know, it was like, you know, five minutes. But otherwise, it was a small con. Nassau Coliseum's kind of small. They did it on the floor.
I like doing the small cons, though.
I just like being, first of all, the art. I love art.
Yeah. The comic book art is insane.
These guys who can draw stuff.
It's insane, dude.
Forget it. That, to me, is the best part of any Comic-Con. I was always shocked because when we were filming, you know, Terry and Oliver Holler.
Yeah.
Good friends.
Very much.
We went to Ohio. With them, Dayton? No, not Dayton. Cleveland. It was Cleveland. We went to the Cleveland Comic Con, which I guess is a relatively you know, it's not one of the majors.
Yeah, it's not one of WizardCon. WizardCon is like the big guys.
Yeah, but they have it. I mean, it's in a convention center. I mean, it's big. Mm-hmm. And we filmed Terry and Oliver's panel. And this was the first time in my life that I'd ever been to a panel at a Comic-Con. Now, if you've never been there, all you know is what you see in major news coverage, which is like the new release of the next Marvel film. And there's, you know, 5,000 right. people in the room. That, to me, is what a Comic-Con panel is. And I walk into this panel.
And you're in this little room.
Terry, you know, Terry and Oliver are talking about building their DeLorean time machine. And it was a blizzard. We got so lucky because we drove. And then after we get there, this blizzard thing happens. No, you can't even get around the city. But luckily, our hotel was right next door to the convention center.
Yeah.
So they do this panel, and there's like 20, 30 people in the room. And at this point, we were scheduled to do our first panel. I think it was in Chicago. I don't remember. But, I mean, we were lucky. We only did big shows. So we did, like, a big show. We did San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego.
We did WonderCon, yeah. which is also huge. So we did big. We did London thing. We did big shows. And I see this thing of 20 people, and I was like, holy shit. Like, this is a Comic-Con panel? And then we go do our first thing.
We've done Bakersfield.
And we come in the room, and we sit down to do our first panel. No, it was WonderCon. Our first panel was WonderCon, and the room was packed. 400 people in the room, standing room only, and I was like, people come to these things?
Dude.
Like, I can't wrap my hands
you
around
it. You
saw
London. It must have been 1,000 people in there.
There were 2,000 people for you. There were 1,500 people for us.
Wow.
I give a thanks to the London Film and Comic Con. They put together the largest reunion of Back to the Future cast members, I think, ever.
In the history of ever.
Ever. I mean, they had, I forget the name of the actress who played, Lorraine's mother in 1955. I don't know her name.
She was there?
She was there. On the same panel as you.
No, of course I was there. I'm trying to remember. I don't.
She was there.
Maybe I just didn't know it was her.
And she goes, I worked on this film for a day. She goes, I worked on this film for one day, you know, 30 plus years ago. And I can't even believe I'm here. So they schedule this massive, massive reunion with you guys. And what do? They put our panel right before it in the same room. So, of course, what happens is all the people who want the good
perfect,
seats.
Perfect, yeah.
I mean, we got hooked up.
That worked out perfect.
That was the best treatment we ever got. Because we were on, I mean, I knew that I was on the Back to the Future train. But, I mean, we were riding up with the conductor in London. So London was a crazy time. I mean, do you, you do all right for yourself with the voiceover stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do. That's primarily voiceover. Not primarily voiceover, all voiceover.
And you don't get royalties from Back to the Future.
They're not called royalties. They're called residuals, and they trickle in.
But you're not making a living on it.
No, by no stretch of the imagination.
So, are you glad that this is in your life, or you could have lived without it?
A little bit of both. You know, I'm happy that I affected people, you know, it's weird to know that something you did as an artist trying to make some money affected people so much around the world over such a long period of time. So, you know, I got to respect that.
And this is what I just want to ask everybody who was in that movie. This was 30 years ago.
32.
You've been pounding the pavement for the last 3+ decades. Is it a weird thing that people still talk about?
Totally weird.
That?
You don't even have to finish the sentence. It's the weirdest thing in the world. My kid cracks up. Sometimes we'll go someplace and somebody will see me and recognize and just like, hey, and then my kid will look at me like, wow, I don't believe this. So yeah, it's a yin and a yang. What's the good and the bad?
How's the industry changed?
Technology. The behind the scenes workings haven't really changed that much. You know, I mean, like we were discussing the whole, you know, whole Harvey Weinstein thing and all that. It's always been that way. It's always going to. It's actually, if you think about it, if you do your film history and you think about it, ever since the beginning of film, there's always been that dynamic.
You know, I mean, I work in the business. I'm not. I haven't been around.
Let's talk about Fatty Arbuckle.
I mean, I haven't been around Hollywood, but I look at, you know, over the holidays, we're watching a lot of old movies because that's what my girlfriend's family likes to do. And
I loved the film genre, man, from like the early 30s to the late 40s.
And
man,
you look at some of these starlets and you wonder what they went through. Like, I can't even, I mean, it probably makes what
they went through everything that you can imagine, because it was a male dominated business in a male dominated country.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I think the scary thing is, so now, because of the way society is changing, Hollywood is attempting to follow suit. And we just went through awards season and everybody's got a pin or a button.
Hollywood is patting themselves on the back for addressing something that should have been addressed a long time ago. We'll see how it works out long term. I personally don't have much faith in it, because as long as there are people who have power over people, and the people who are trying to get next to the people that have power are willing to sacrifice their morals all the time. It's human nature.
So how does that affect...
Wow, that was deep.
it was like morals. How does it affect you, though? I mean, you've been doing the same thing.
I'm past the casting couch phase. No one wants me.
So do you in what you do, right? The way the industry's gone, it doesn't really affect you in your everyday workings of what you're doing as far as a voice actor.
I work in a part of Hollywood that is completely unsung. It's silent, you know. No one that's not in the industry even knows what it is that I do, as far as, you know, what the...
So what does a voice actor do?
Well, like I said, I mean, you know, you have aspects, man. You have like narration, animated voice, spokesperson, audiobooks, everything, announcers, you know. Once again, my particular aspect of it is ADR, automated dialogue replacement. Anytime that you shoot a show, everybody in the background has to be quiet. Well, if you were to put that particular project on the screen and have an audience come see it, and they're seeing all these people in the background and they're listening to this conversation, it would be the most bland thing that you've ever seen in your life. People need to realize that in post-production, we add forks to the sounds of plates, glasses clinking together, people walking, cars driving by, airplanes. All of that is added afterwards.
And what's your role in all that?
My role is, like we're saying, the scenes in the background. Like, we put the voices into the extras. The extras who have to be silent as improv actors, because most of the people in my business have improvisation skills. You have to, because you have to, first of all, have knowledge of whatever the content of that particular scene is. And you just have to riff on it, which is a very nice thing to do, because as an improvisational actor, it gives you a chance to polish your skill and hone in on it while making money, while making something viable. I do a lot of voice replacements for celebrities on these shows, as well as all the other background voices.
Who have you gotten to do that? Who are the household names?
Well, there's Sam Jackson. There's LL Cool J, Eddie Murphy. I've done Denzel. That was a job, because Denzel has such a unique voice. It took me a really, really long time just to get one line, you know. As well as a score of various animated films, like, here we go. Toy Story, Shark Tales, Shrek, Mulan, Wally, Up. And you got to Google the rest.
So when you're working on that stuff, you are doing voice replacement for other actors.
Correct. Well, on the animated stuff, it's my voice. I'm actually voicing a character. So you say, what do I do in regard to voice? And earlier I said, there's various aspects. On those particular things, those were animated projects, and I was various characters in those animated projects. When it comes to film and television, it's replacing and adding sound to make it live.
What was the most fun voice you've ever gotten to do?
Sam Jackson's the most fun, because he's so... Hey, you damn right, that whole thing, you know, like that. He's so expressive in his voice. It's fun to do.
You would not believe this, but this is hilarious. A friend of mine is making a bar mitzvah movie. The same guy who made the bar mitzvah movie with the DeLorean in it that prompted me to make Back in Time 6 years ago. And he was looking for a Sam Jackson impersonator. And he sent me, I'll play this for you in the podcast. It's really funny. This just happened yesterday. And I told him he's got to can it, because it's awful.
Now, don't get it twisted. I'm not a Samuel Jackson impersonator. But what will happen is, on the stage, you'll play it over his voice over and over again. Basically, what I am is a minor bird. I mimic. So you'll hear him say something. Well, you know, he uses expletives all the time. And what happens is when those things get shifted to television or airlines, you got to take those out. So we'll go in the studio and they'll play his line over and over, over again so I can get his vocal imprint into my head. And then I'll say the whole line, but all they want to get right is just the expletive.
Now, back in the 90s when they started doing this, it was awful.
They didn't start doing this in the 90s,
well,
bro.
Well, I'm saying when you saw these on TV movies.
Like, oh, yeah.
And the ADR.
In the 2000s even, you can still see some terrible stuff.
The audio was so, like, first of all, it sounded like it was recorded 6 years apart.
And the voices.
And the voices don't sound like at all.
It was like male for female. Like, why did that get better? Because it's much better now.
It is, but there's still some crap, you know, and it's like, I can't explain that. You can still turn on some stuff now, some movies that have been dubbed to take out all the bad words, and you can still listen, and you go like, that's not that person. Wesley Snipes, that's the other one. That it was fun doing Wesley Snipes. I did Wesley Snipes for what was the movie with Sandra Bullock when they were in the future? Demolition Man. Wesley refused to say Jeffrey Dahmer. I love that dude. He refused to say it. They hired me. I didn't give a crap. I went in there and made the money.
That's so interesting because then it's as if he said it.
Exactly.
To the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
So his whole political stance is for not.
Well, you know, and once again, that brings us back to the power of the studio.
Yeah, how would you even know? Yeah.
And I was so good, he may have actually said, damn, I don't even remember saying it. Now you got to go back and watch the movie and listen. Go back and you'll go, wow.
So that was in the A cut of the movie.
Oh, wow. Chris Rock. Chris Tucker, too. I just realized we did Fifth Element. I did Chris Tucker in the Fifth Element.
That was before Chris Tucker was even Chris Tucker.
No, he was pretty big.
What
wouldn't he say? Huh? Well, no, it's not what he wouldn't say. But there were things, you know, you saw in that thing, like the big explosions and stuff going on. So they just had audio anomalies.
Yeah.
So they just had to fill in some spots where audio anomalies took place.
Well, that movie was Fifth Element before Rush Hour or after?
I do not know. I can't remember.
I remember.
But he was pretty big. It was before. He was still pretty big.
That movie was very big.
Yeah.
But he, I mean, after the first Rush Hour, he... another level. And then I think his life went down the toilet, right?
Yeah, it seems like when you're given a whole bunch of millions of dollars at a young age, things happen.
Yeah. So, where is the industry going to go at this point?
The place is always gone. To the future.
Is anything going to change? Uh-oh, I might have to pay some royalties now.
Uh-oh.
On this thing.
I'm good with Alan Silvestri and Bob Gale.
Oh, me too. You know, do you know Alan Silvestri and I are from the same town?
Wow.
We're from the same tiny little town in New Jersey. And
I was born in a small town. Is that how it goes?
Maybe.
Was that Bruce Springsteen? Wasn't that a Bruce Springsteen song? Or did I just make up some stuff?
Yeah, that was right.
Oh, okay.
So Alan and I when I researched Alan...
Yeah, see, I knew it was something that was telling me something was wrong about that.
When I researched Alan, I found out that he was from my town, which I thought was crazy, and then I forgot. Like, a couple weeks, months, whatever went by, and then I went to interview him. I interviewed him at the... some hotel here, downtown, the Intercontinental. And it was awesome. He was working on Zemeckis' movie. He was doing The Wire at the time.
February 17th, 2015.
Well, was that the day that we went to the Hollywood Bowl?
No, that was the day that he interviewed me because it was right after Alan Silvestri.
Oh, so you were right after Alan Silvestri?
No, you were before.
Before, I'm very excited.
Because I never met Alan Silvestri until the Hollywood Bowl.
Videotaped.
Yeah.
So I go to his hotel, Intercontinental, and I go up to his room, and he was writing for The Wire. Is it The Wire, The Line, something about a guy who walks across the Twin Towers. And he had a suite. And then took the adjoining room next door and turned it into a music studio.
Yeah, man.
It was, and I play guitar and sing. My producer's a drummer. And we were like tripping out. And he turns on all his software and he just starts writing for us. He just starts playing.
It's amazing what a budget will do.
But it's not even that.
No, he's an extremely gifted individual.
Right, you're in a room with a musical genius.
He's a genius. He's a really gifted dude.
His messing around on a keyboard, I mean, I'm like, can I have that? Can I use that on something, you know? It was amazing. But then he had the newspaper, our hometown newspaper, in that room about the day after the guy had walked across the Twin Towers, because he was writing on the movie and he had the paper there. And I saw the paper. And I look at him and I go, that's so funny. That's my home. And then I like instantly remembered. And then for the next like half hour, we were tripping out talking about.
What is that hometown?
It's Teaneck, New Jersey.
Teaneck, the Isley Brothers.
Teaneck, New Jersey. And the record and the paper was the record, the Bergen Record. And then he and I just started tripping out. Like we went to the same ice cream store growing up, like on the same street. And we're talking about he lived in my. And then I found out that me and him had something else besides music in common, which was drones.
Oh, he does drones, huh?
Alan has a vineyard. So he lives on lots
of land.
Hey,
that's wine. That's not drones.
No, that's correct.
It's a drone.
Right.
What, to look at his what do you call them? Crops? Yeah. Fields? What?
That's not why he has a drone. He's not living in a small property. He has many acres of land.
Most of the above-the-line people from Back to the Future aren't living on small property.
I understand. Where do we draw the line?
The line.
Where is the line?
The last producer.
So he, I had no idea. He was huge into drones. He had 5 drones in the hotel room.
Wow.
And I was like, you fly drones? I fly drones. I said, it just so happens that I have an Inspire in my car outside. And at the time, this was still when those things were expensive and nobody really had it. I had it for work that I was doing. He had these little drones in his room. When we finish the interview, he ends up coming down to the parking lot with us, and right in the valet at the Intercontinental, we pull out the drone, like start it up. We didn't fly it, but I mean, we're right in front of the hotel. And then he was very kind because of all the ruckus we were causing. He gave a very nice tip to the guy in the valet for us taking up their time. I guess the above-the-line people from Back to the Future also have money for good tips.
Yeah. I think you may have asked me about royalties earlier at some point. Yeah, I get residuals. They get royalties.
What's next for you?
You know, the future is wide open. I keep using that word. You know, I can't help it. You know,
it's part of work.
Yeah, it's been a very important part of my life.
Documentary.
Yeah, I'm actually doing this documentary, The Fastest DeLorean in the World. You know, my good friend Adam Contras and his trials and tribulations with his DeLorean time machine.
Coming to a streaming service near you.
You know, it's for you youngsters. You don't have to look at it on the TV. Just get out your iOS device or your, what's the other one?
Android,
yes, sir. Yes. you know, and then, you know, a few cons for the year. And just basically, I just love flying my airplane and riding in my boat and pulling fish out of the ocean and just living life, you know? I'm not exactly a spring chicken anymore, so I'm just having some fun.
You sound like a real LA guy, you know, just flying a plane, fishing.
Well, you know what, just to be clear, there are pilots in all 50 of our states and most of our territories.
They don't all fish, though.
Well, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
That I'm emulating what I've read and seen.
By the way, that's another thing that we have in common, because I too fly planes.
Yeah, but you fly first class. I fly the plane.
No, I fly Cessnas.
Okay, so first of all, I'm going to have an issue with that, because when you say you fly Cessnas...
I pilot the aircraft.
If you're an aviator, you're a private pilot, you fly single engine piston airplanes, of which Cessna is a brand. In other words, that's like me saying, I drive Datsuns.
Well, you might.
No, I don't. But the point I'm
you
making
is... You drive a lot nicer than that.
But the point I'm trying to make is, are you a pilot, really?
Yeah.
When did you get your ticket?
I didn't finish yet. I got 22 and a half hours on my way.
Okay. Well, good for you.
I should have brought my
license. In essence, then, you're training in a Cessna.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. Yes. I trained in a Cessna.
Really?
Yeah, but once you get your ticket, you realize that Cessnas.
No, I know. I get it. I mean, I spend a lot of time on YouTube. Believe it or not, I started pilot lessons because at the time that I started, you needed a hot air balloon license or better. So better would be, after that would be sport pilot, private, or better.
Right.
To pilot a drone. That was actually the law prior to
last
summer. So prior to the summer of 2016, if you wanted to commercially fly a drone. Now, for your own hobby's sake, if you wanted to go to the store and buy a DJI Phantom and fly it, you could do that no problem. I mean, you still have to follow some basic rules in terms of flying to airports, stuff like that. If you were getting paid for it in any way, that means if you were flying a drone at somebody's wedding or flying a drone in a feature film, you needed to have someone on the drone crew. Didn't even have to be somebody manning the controls, but somebody on the crew had to have a pilot's license. Now, they did that to attempt to control the airspace, make sure nobody's doing anything stupid, and just because the FAA is behind the times. So I got right on board.
Oh, because you wanted to fly your drones.
Exactly.
Dang.
I was already flying drones.
But you wanted to be legal, yeah.
Exactly.
And I remember that because idiots were flying their drones over runways.
Oh, people ruined it for everybody. People ruined it for everybody. And I'm not going to sit here and say, although I shouldn't, but I did some stuff that shouldn't have been done. But even then, I mean, the stuff that you read, guy landed his drone on the White House lawn. That happened. And then it turned the entire Washington, D.C. after that, you can no longer fly a drone. It's a drone-restricted airspace now because of the moron that landed his drone on the White House lawn. And then you had a guy who, you had guys crashing into bridges. The runway, yeah. The runway stuff. We actually flew over a runway completely by accident. And we were following a car. We were doing a commercial for a big brand, not going to say who. And they didn't scout the route properly. So we weren't scouting the route. We knew, okay, our truck's going to drive. You're going to follow them with a drone. You're going to film it. And we're flying in a chase car. And I'm looking down at the monitor and I go, like, my eyes came like a foot out of my head because right in my monitor, I saw that we were flying directly over a runway.
Oh!
Directly over a runway. It was a small airport. You wouldn't have seen it from the road either. It was behind trees, and immediately we stopped the shot, immediately landed the drone. Yeah. Yelled at the project coordinator like, hey,
well, the funny thing is now, every time you update your software or your firmware, like now when I first had my DJI, where my plane is at the airport, man, I could fly around the airport. I was getting nice visuals of my airplane and hangars and other stuff. Now when I try and fly, it goes up and goes right back down.
Yep.
I hold the controls. As long as I hold the control, it'll go up. It'll go up about 8 feet, but as soon as I try to maneuver, it comes right
now,
back
I'm
down.
I'm not giving you any legal advice, but put it into Addy mode.
Yeah, there's a way around it.
Yeah, there's always a workaround.
take it out of GPS mode.
Because now, certain airports, major commercial airports, it will not, it just won't take off. But then other airports, you can get like waivers and stuff like that. So if you put it, There are ways around everything. Yeah, it's technology.
It's funny though, but
don't
I remember.
Fly near an airport,
I remember originally though it was not a problem, but now it is a problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the technology is emerging so fast. I mean, I fly. This will be interesting to you.
Yeah, it's me, Adam.
I fly on a lot of
burritos. We're gonna get burritos. That's a California thing. Do you have burritos in New York?
We do. We do.
They're not authentic.
That's like saying we have pizza here.
Yeah.
So I fly drones on television feature films.
Okay.
And I am not Local 600.
I don't know if that's a union thing or
what.
Well,
so that's the thing. Neither does the union.
So what? That reminds me of something we discussed earlier. You do a lot of guerrilla filmmaking.
No, this isn't guerrilla. This is legal. What has happened is because drones are so new, the unions have not made it a union position yet. So we get hired as a drone team.
Oh, I see, as an operator.
Right, so we're getting hired as a drone team to come in, and we're getting hired as a service the same way that, like, the linen company or the catering company is getting, it's not a union catering company. So we're getting hired as a service. But the problem is, I am a camera operator. That is my credit. That is what I'm doing on set. I'm operating a camera on a set, not in the union. It's the Wild Wild West.
Right now, until we get some regulations in there.
So, you know, things keep changing. They think 2018 will be the year where we'll become a union position.
So just to retrace what you said to me earlier about where do I think the industry is going, hell, you just discussed it. The only thing that's going to change is the technology. Behaviors will stay the same. Technology will change.
It's true, because people tend not to change, which is sad. I think the general public thinks that what's going on in Hollywood now is gonna clean it out and make it better.
Let me give you a hint.
I'm giving you the microphone.
No, I was just going to... I don't want to interrupt, but if you're a studio now, the amount of money they lost on Spacey, you are now going to think twice before you hire a male and that's going to last for a little bit of time.
That's going to last for a year or so.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I got.
If the men change what they're doing, Franco's killing them. Spacey's killing them. These people are, studios are losing bazillions.
We got to get rid of Franco. Oh, my God.
I mean, what I'm just saying is if you're going to take a risk, you're going to hire the woman. They're less apt to your entire organization. So it's going to be woman heavy for the next couple of years. It just is.
Well, that's fine.
Men with a really good reputation will be fine.
That's fine. It should be because I felt they were underrepresented.
Right, but that's the shift.
But as far as the behavior is concerned, I don't feel that it's going to ever change. It'll cave in for a little bit. It'll go underground. It's like racism. It'll just go underground because it's catching too much heat, and then it'll it'll reemerge again.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens in the future. Don, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, you know what? There's always the future.
That was so fun playing mini golf, hanging out in LA. What could be more fun than that? I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was a lot of fun for me. Got some really cool insights. And we'll see where Don's predictions go. You know, in the future. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. The Manifest is now closed. Find us on iTunes or visit jasonaron.com for more. Bye-bye.